might pay huge dividends later. I relaxed in one of the comfy armchairs in his sitting room to read a paper while the vitamin slowly infused into me over a period of a few hours. It was nothing like the clinical, sterile atmosphere of a medical setting. The Hammersmith Hospital instead screamed, "You are a patient. You are ill." At first, I was a little nervous about how it would feel. Other patients report an occasional mild stinging. But with the PICC line in place, I felt nothing. After each intravenous infusion, he would give me a treatment called ultraviolet blood irradiation, UBI, to kill bacteria and viruses. Cervical cancer, along with head and neck cancer, is linked to the HPV virus, so this made perfect sense to me. An altered microbiome, the mix of bacteria, fungi, parasites surrounding tumors, is slowly being recognized as a cause of the disease. It is this tumor microenvironment, or terrain, surrounding the cancer cells that is now the focus of research. UBI was achieved by withdrawing a large syringe of blood from my arm through a line that was then passed under a UV lamp. This simple but effective technique, the knot technique, was regularly and successfully used back in the 1940s for polio and other viruses. With the introduction of mass vaccination programs, it was sidelined and eventually phased out, except by a few holistic doctors. Nowadays, it's still used by the famous Reardon Clinic in Kansas, but most people I talk to have never heard of it. There are clinics that now offer a more modern version of this treatment. UBI works its magic by acting as a natural antibiotic and stimulating an immune response. There is no question that UV kills pathogens. That's how city water supplies are sterilized, as well as some spas or pools. But how might it work if you don't treat the entire blood system, but only a few syringes of blood? The difference between us and a swimming pool, well, okay, not the only difference, is that we have an immune system, an army that normally does the job of cleaning up infections very efficiently. In cancer, this immune army is suppressed, but UBI triggers a vaccine-like response, upregulating it again. When pathogens die, they're left in a broken-down state in the blood. The remnants can then be recognized by the immune system. These become antigens that then stimulate your white cells to mount a more efficient attack on the pathogens, viral, bacterial, or otherwise, that may be at the heart of your cancer. Even when treatments use a very small amount of blood, UBI seems to have a beneficial effect. Is this a much cheaper, simpler, and more effective alternative to the emerging use of dendritic vaccines that work on stimulating a patient's immune response? Or would the addition of this therapy alongside a dendritic vaccine help them work better? UV blood irradiation has been shown to provide a beneficial systemic response throughout the body, improving the abnormal microenvironment around cancer cells. It may sound counterintuitive, but when you have cancer, you need some free radicals to kill your tumor cells. Free radical generation is exactly the method of orthodox medicine employs with chemotherapy and ionizing radiation to kill tumor cells, and why intravenous vitamin C works. Each produces so many free radicals that it pushes cancer into self-destruction. Yes, those things we're all told to steer clear of, those troublesome radicals that cause so much damage and allegedly age us. I fear it has been mainly excess glucose and insulin, not just free radicals. We are told we should avoid them at all costs, right? Wrong. Not when you want to get rid of cancer cells. Tumors defend themselves by neutralizing ammonia, a result of abnormal cancer metabolism, by producing more of the major antioxidant, glutathione, to stop too much internal damage from oxidation and ammonia. By being able to do this, the cancer cells become immortal, resisting normal cell death. Glutathione is to be avoided, especially during a kill phase. Giving these tumor cells an excess of free radicals overwhelms their defenses, giving them the push they need to die through a normal process activated in the mitochondria when there is too much damage. Chemotherapy and radiotherapy do the same. They provide free radicals, but they're normally given in such a way that they damage healthy cells in the process. What is not generally known is that you can replicate this free radical effect efficiently and more selectively than either chemotherapy or radiotherapy with high-dose intravenous vitamin C. Free radicals, reactive oxygen species, or ROS, are chemically unstable oxygen molecules. ROS are chemically reactive molecules containing oxygen, such as hydrogen peroxide and superoxide, normally produced in low numbers during normal cell metabolism. It has been known for almost a century that oxygen selectively kills tumor cells. To avoid creating too much oxygen during the cell's metabolism, cancer cells use a process of fermentation to make their energy an anaerobic, oxygen-free process. This alternative energy pathway, the Warburg effect, keeps the production of ROS lower and so helps ensure the tumor's survival. When a normal cell is injured, in the mitochondria, for example, an increase of ROS signals the white cells to come and sort out a problem to either repair or destroy the defective cell. The aim of chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and indeed high-dose intravenous vitamin C is to create an excess of ROS, unstable free radicals. Because when this exceeds the tumor cell's ability to neutralize the damage caused by the free radicals with glutathione, the cell is earmarked for destruction. If you're now scratching your head, let me summarize. In cancer, ROS, oxygen-free radicals, are good, as these kill the cancer cells. Glutathione, antioxidant, is bad, as it keeps the cancer cells alive. If you're healthy, it is the opposite. Almost everyone seems to confuse this point. Compounds for cancer prevention are not equally beneficial for treating active cancer. They are two separate situations entirely. There are major natural cancer organizations out there who mean well, but have yet to realize this fundamental flaw when they recommend patients take N-acetylcysteine, NAC. A precursor to glutathione, to help treat their disease. NAC, low-dose oral vitamin C, at an antioxidant dose, vitamin E and COQ10 all recycle the master antioxidant, glutathione. All are to be avoided during chemotherapy treatment. NAC is also found in whey protein and bone broth. Bone broth is great for healing the gut, but choosing the right time to take this becomes paramount so that treatments don't cancel each other out. Taking glutamine with glucosamine is, in my view, a better strategy to heal the gut during chemotherapy. However, if at some point you need to boost white cells, detoxify of harmful metals, NAC is good at this too, or detox the effects of too much chemotherapy, then seek advice. A short burst of NAC may be beneficial. It is contentious, and there will be divided opinions. If in doubt, leave it out. I have also come across differing opinions between complementary therapists and other health practitioners about whether you should take the amino acid glutamine during chemotherapy, which can also be used to make glutathione, but it cannot create this without the presence of cysteine. Lowering cysteine intake is a better strategy than reducing glutamine. Glutamine can indeed fuel cancer cells, but it's also crucial for the defense of the body. It heals and maintains a good gut lining and is essential for the proper workings of the immune system. It is the most abundant amino acid in the body. It can be sequestered from anywhere in your system to feed cancer's insatiable appetite. so cutting it out from the diet may be a poor decision during chemotherapy. If your muscles are wasting away, it's a sign that your body has a high demand for glutamine. It's best to starve glutamine indirectly by working on the enzymes that break down glutamine for fuel, e.g. glutaminase or ketoglutarate dehydrogenase. Although your cancer cells demand it, your body needs it too. Cancer will grab glutamine from any of your tissues whether you starve it or not, and replenishing it should not be feared. It is lowering cysteine levels, thereby blocking the production of the antioxidant glutathione that is a more important strategy to weaken the cancer cell. Researching diabetes treatments, I discovered elevated circulating insulin also elevates insulin-like growth factor, IGF-1, which in turn stimulates cysteine and other amino acid uptake. This in turn then boosts glutathione levels, allowing the cancer cells immortality and the ability to neutralize ROS. A reason why diabetics have much higher rates of cancer and are much harder to treat. Oxygen is known to attack and kill cancer cells. In fact, researchers use it to destroy cancer cells at the end of an experiment. Normal cells are aerobic. They can deal with an oxygen environment, whereas the stem cells in a tumor cannot. They metabolize their energy anaerobically, like primordial single cells did eons ago, before the earth was oxygenated. With glutathione lowered, the cell is much more vulnerable to an increase in oxygenating substances, making it far easier to destroy through the caspase cascade. I was to discover a way to trigger this apoptotic cell death process more easily using a better combination a few years later. Most cancer patients, when they think of oxygenating the body, immediately think of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, HBOT, a chamber used initially for deep sea divers to stop the bends and now used for MS sufferers. Or they think of ozone or DMSO, both useful too. But patients need to seriously consider using intravenous vitamin C as a powerful oxygenating method to kill cancer alongside chemotherapy. Chemotherapy at high doses wrecks the gut, no question. Many patients are so severely affected, it means they can no longer eat normally afterwards. My gut, I felt sure, had suffered damage too, but because I'd insisted on the lower dose, I hoped I'd fare better than most. I was confident I could repair it. By now, my head was swimming with a lot of information, which was hard to compute with chemo brain. I was learning and assimilating so much. There was no doubt the medical profession was failing to realize that whatever they were prescribing, it was nowhere near enough to fight the disease. It was hard to take everything I wanted to take during treatment. Worried for my stomach, I had dropped taking aspirin and instead I took pycnogenol, a natural but not necessarily equal alternative. Curcumin I tried for its anti-inflammatory benefits, but it often made me feel nauseous. Instead, I kept inflammation down by taking more fish oils. After my chemotherapy treatment finished, I came across another fish oil, shark liver oil, which would not only help control inflammation with its omega-3 content, but also contained high levels of other beneficial substances. Sharks rarely get cancer, although a few solid tumors have been detected, but no blood cancers that I can find. A Scandinavian oncologist called Dr. Astrid Bruchholt decided to study shark liver oil after first noting the beneficial effects of calf's marrow on children with leukemia, a blood cancer. She discovered the calf's marrow had immune-stimulating effects because of compounds called alkaliglycerols, AKGs. Dr. Bruchholt then realized these compounds were found in significantly higher levels in shark liver oil. The AKGs occur in humans, in our bone marrow and spleen, in